T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station. Color analyst for the White Sox, Steve Stone.
Try it with your bare hand. It's a lot easier that way.
Joins Lawrence Holmes.
Steve Stone is a Cy Young Award winner. He is a fantastic color analyst for your Chicago White Sox, and he is a Score baseball expert.
And Al Michaels invites me to lunch. He says, okay, so here's an interesting job you have tonight. You can, one, agree with everything that Howard says, and then you'll lose your credibility with every baseball person in the country.
Steve Stone talks with Lawrence Holmes.
Or two, you can disagree with everything that Howard says, and you will probably develop a very powerful enemy in Howard Cosell, because he's very tight with the network.
Social media god Steve Stone and Lawrence Holmes, right now on The Score.
We love talking baseball with Steve Stone, and today is no different. He joins me on the Circuit Resort and Casino Hotline. Circuit Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, they are home of the world's largest sports book. And now Steve Stone joins us here on The Score. Hey, Stoney.
Hello, Lawrence. You know, I thought I was joining a sports show, and I was listening to the crossover, and I thought I had automatically switched on to Dr. Phil. I didn't know exactly where we were going with this, but... Okay, that's good. You guys had a wonderful time, and I like that. It's a nice crossover.
Yes, well, thank you very much. We like to have fun, especially at Chris Ranji's expense. I think that is the most important thing to take away from this. Stoney, I got a lot of stuff that I want to run by you. Number one, Dallas Keuchel is going to start tonight. Why has he struggled? What are the things that you've seen on why Dallas is having a hard time over the last 8 starts or so?
I think Dallas has said it's a flaw in his mechanics, and with all of the video they have and with one of the better pitching coaches around in Ethan Katz, I think they'll probably figure it out. From what I've seen, it's a matter maybe. Again, he's not a hard thrower. I'm not saying he has to throw any harder. What I think is maybe just staying back over the back leg a little bit longer and pushing off the mound to kind of attack that cutter. Because the cutter's gotten lazy, and because it's gotten lazy, he's not getting it inside to the right-handers. And because he's not getting the cutter inside to the right-handers, it doesn't really open up that outside part of the plate. Then, because of the mechanical flaw, he's missing on the outside part of the plate with his fastball and his straight change. So he falls behind. And, you know, when you have supreme confidence in your stuff, you don't go from 0-2 to 3-2 on a regular basis, and that's exactly what Dallas is doing. He gets ahead of a lot of hitters, and then he goes and runs the count out full. He misses, it's a walk. Or he just gets behind 2-0, and now you got to make a pretty good pitch with less than overwhelming stuff, and they hit it awfully hard. When Dallas was at his Cy Young Award best, when he was dominating hitters in the American League for quite some time, he was doing it by getting ahead of just about everybody, taking advantage of a good sinker. He still can throw a lot of ground balls. But you can't run counts full, and you can't keep getting behind hitters as much as he has. So hopefully tonight, in a big ballpark, and Oakland is one of those, I think we saw it last night with Jimmy Lambert, you can give up some long fly balls there, and they will pretty much stay in the ballpark. That's kind of the temperatures late in Oakland. It's a little damp. The ball doesn't travel as well. At night, it's a difficult place to hit the ball out of. But maybe Dallas can take advantage of that. I know with the injuries to the starting rotation, the Sox could really use not only a healthy Dallas, because I believe he is healthy, but they could use an effective Dallas, and especially they could use the innings. Last night was perfect to set up the bullpen with Jimmy Lambert going five, and they would love to see five or six out of Dallas tonight.
That's one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about, where the value that Dallas Keuchel can give the White Sox. Let's not even talk about October yet, but getting them to October, there's value in Keuchel and Reynaldo and Jimmy Lambert at this point just eating innings until the other guys can get healthy or feel comfortable throwing and going deeper into games. How does one go about trying to eat innings versus just, you know, trying to win starts?
Well, you don't set out with the goal of eating innings, Lawrence. You set out with the goal of making a good pitch on strike one. You have to take a difficult task and boil it down to its simplest parts. And for a pitcher, the simplest part is one pitch at a time. That becomes your whole universe. And that goes with concentration and everything that goes into the mental aspect of competing. You don't look at winning a ball game. You don't look at going to the sixth or seventh inning. You look at throwing a good pitch on the first pitch. Once having accomplished that, then your whole universe becomes the second pitch. That is the way that you have to do it. That's the way you have to approach each and every time you go to a major league mound. The better pitchers are able to do that. They're able to boil down all of their five senses into this laser-like focus, which allows them to hit the spots because, you know, the difference between a ground ball to second base from Dallas Keuchel and a guy hitting a drive to right center field is maybe an inch. So you have to hit your spots consistently, and it takes somebody with a laser-like focus to be able to do that. There are days when it's easier than others. There's days when it seems automatic. There's other days when it's really a battle. And lately, Dallas has really had a battle, but I think he's got to go back to the fundamentals. I think he has to remember what it was like that year in 2017 when he won the Cy. I think he also has to realize that he is still good enough to get major league hitters out. And hopefully we'll see that tonight.
Overall, it doesn't have to be about Dallas, but when pitchers are struggling, what are the traps that they have to avoid as they're preparing each pitch? And as you say, like creating each universe based on the next pitch.
Well, I think it's not allowing yourself the emotions that you have normally on the mound, because it's an emotional roller coaster. It's one of those things where you're going up, you're going down. You're happy you get a strikeout in a big situation. You're unhappy you got runners at second and third, nobody out. And I gave myself, and the theory that I created for me was the green and brown theory. I gave myself any emotion I wanted to when I was on the green grass of the infield. If I wanted to bemoan my fate, I would act like that. If I wanted to scream into my glove, I would do that as long as I was on the grass. But I trained myself, as soon as I got to the dirt, the brown of the mound, I would have all of these emotions just completely drain out of my body and go back to pure concentration. That's exactly how I taught myself to go from really a mediocre pitcher to a guy that won the Cy Young Award. Was a set of mental gymnastics, and the green and brown theory was one of them, and I think Dallas has to get back to that. Dallas is a smart guy. He also has a smart pitching coach, and eventually they're going to get back to that point where, again, it becomes his whole universe. He does not allow the emotions to overcome him, because anger is a luxury a pitcher can't afford. Anger distorts your perceptions. When your perceptions are distorted, you can't make that pinpoint pitch you really have to make in a key situation. Dallas throws enough ground balls to be successful. There's no doubt he'd be the first to admit that it's a combination. He's had some bad luck. He's also been awful. So if you look in the mirror and you're honest with yourself, you realize you're just not getting the job done. And Lawrence, one of the quotes I really like, and I originally heard it from Lou Holtz, and it characterizes every business that you have to achieve something to get really good at it. And the quote was, "Don't tell me how rough the water is, just bring in the ship." Nobody wants to hear excuses. Everybody can see what's going on. There are days when you don't feel as good as other days. There's days when the arm doesn't feel good. The one thing you always have is your mind. If you allow your mind to control your body, to control your actions, that mind will always be there. The body will wane. It will go. Some days will be better than others. The mind is the key to everything we accomplish in life.
It was a bit of a freak accident last night, and freak accidents seem to catch Aloy, which always terrifies me, where he gets hit with a foul ball in the knee. Is there, because it was a freak accident, do you think that there's any need for some uniformity on how dugouts are constructed, where there should be some safety for the guys inside the dugout other than their teammates having to stand there and form a wall?
I really dislike that Oakland ballpark. I love to pitch there because you got a lot of foul territory. Balls that would be in the seats, our guys are out. I don't love the fact that mound is in the field of play. You saw with Moncada, he raced for a ball and he realized that he would have to go up on that mound and risk getting hurt, and he just let the ball fall. So that mound in the playing area is ridiculous. That's number one. Number two, not having anything in front of those dugouts is absolute stupidity. You couldn't do anything dumber. Fortunately, with Aloy, it was just a knee, and I say just because I don't think he'll play today, but you never really know how it's going to come out. But some guy could absolutely get hit in the head, and that could cost a career. There is no reason not to have some sort of barrier up there to stop line drives from going in the dugout. I mean, the fact that they don't have it, to me, might be one of the dumbest things in any field in all of baseball.
I agree. I don't think you could have said it any better. Andrew Vaughn has struggled. 4 hits in his last 32 at-bats for him. Obviously, when you have a young player, he adjusts, the league adjusts. What adjustment has the league made to Andrew Vaughn, and what does he need to do to adjust back?
Well, what's happening with Andrew is pretty simple and happens to most young hitters, and we have to realize that Andrew is still a rookie hitter, didn't have a big backlog of minor league experience. The league is adjusting to him. They're throwing him a lot of high fastballs just barely out of the zone. Then they're just wiping him out with a lot of sliders low and away. You know, if you remember back, what cost Luis Robert last year the Rookie of the Year, and I'm not saying that Andrew Vaughn's going to be as good as Luis Robert, because I think Luis Robert is going to be one of the true stars of baseball. I think Andrew's going to be very good. I just don't think he has the physical tools that Luis has. But what cost Luis the Rookie of the Year was he went dormant for the better part of a month. And he went dormant because guys weren't throwing him strikes. They were getting ahead. He would sometimes take a fastball. I think in one at-bat, you probably saw, if you watched the game, you probably saw exactly why Andrew is struggling and why they call it in between, meaning you're late on the fastball and you're early on the breaking ball. What happens was he gets up 2-0. 2-0, a hitter should be squeezing the sawdust out of the bat, looking for something in the zone, and if he gets it, he's got to kill it. Because that the 2-0-3-1 pitches are the two pitches that you can really unload on. You're ahead of the pitcher. He's got the pressure on him. And if he throws something hittable, if he uses too much of the plate, that's your meat. Well, he took not only one fastball relatively down the middle, but he took a second fastball relatively down the middle and struck out on a slider. You're not going to hit too many sliders. And to take two fastballs in that situation tells you that mentally at this point, he is in between. He should be looking every pitch for a fastball and then adjust to either the curveball or the slider. He's seeing more sliders than curves, so you adjust to anything hanging and you sit on a fastball. Because if you're going to be a major league run producer, if you're going to be a major league hitter, you have got to hit the fastball. And taking two shows me he's a little lost right now. But again, he's a very young hitter. He's been asked to do something that most young hitters are never asked to do that come into major league baseball, and that is learn a new position that he never played before, which was left field. Then when you got that down pretty well, we're going to move you to right field. And then occasionally, I guess just for a joke, we'll put you into second base. I mean, it's very rare that a young player is asked to do that on top of the responsibilities of learning how to hit in the major leagues. Andrew is going to be fine. He's going through some tough times. He will come out of it. He's smart. He's strong. He's talented. And he's just going through what a lot of rookies go through, exactly what Luis Robert went through last year.
Steve Stone joining me here on The Score as we talk baseball, talk about the White Sox. You've been talking about this since April, like since the beginning of the season. And look, you have to pay attention to what type of workload pitchers had in last year's season with 60 games and beyond. And then what ends up happening to them inside of a season where you're going 162 games. With Michael Kopech, considering that he opted out last year, and before that he was coming back from injury, his velocity seems to be fine. His spots, he seems to be missing those a little bit here and there in a few of the times that he's been out to the mound. How do you go about making sure that a guy's sharp in October versus overworking that pitcher so that they've got fatigue? And I know that it's probably more art than science. You know what I mean, Stoney? Like, I don't know if there's an actual answer for it.
Yeah, I think Tony is doing the best job he can, not throwing him out there all that much. But what happens is your arm feels doesn't feel quite as good as it should. And you're still young and you're still strong. So you do have that big fastball. And everybody is deceived because that fastball is coming in at 99. So he's feeling good because it's 99. 99 with life is completely different than 99 straight. 99 straight when you miss your spots, and Michael is missing his spots, that gets hit awfully hard because a lot of people these days are coming in at 98, 99 miles an hour. I mean, you're seeing bullpens full of guys. Class A from Cleveland throws 101. I mean, they have these guys around. Chapman from the Yankees throws 101. They have a lot of these guys. So it's not like it used to be. You miss your spot now, and that's a problem. With Michael Kopech, he had such overwhelming stuff at just about every place he had ever been that maybe you lose the idea of the art of hitting your spots. And then you factor in that you're trying to get more velocity because you know your arm isn't quite as strong, or you suspect it might not be. And then you lose the elasticity. Lawrence, velocity comes from the shoulder. The movement of the ball comes from the wrist. And when you pop your wrist, you get that late movement. You talk about guys with late sink or late ride or late cut. That's the wrist. That's the wrist popping at the end. The velocity is the shoulder. Well, if you lose that late movement and you miss your spot, that's a bad combination. That's going to get hit hard. We're seeing Michael giving up a lot of home runs. If people have been listening to you and I've been on the score quite a bit, I said a couple of months ago, Michael Kopech is going to be due for some difficult times because he had 14-some innings since 2018. It's unrealistic to believe that he can spend a whole season and not go through these downtimes. I also warned against pitchers getting hurt late, and it's not just the arms. It was the legs, notably hamstrings, sometimes calf issues, because going from 60 to 162 is pretty close to unprecedented. Hopefully we'll never see it again. But you're seeing it a lot. Gerrit Cole left the ball game yesterday with a hamstring issue. And Gerrit Cole missed a lot of this season anyway with various injuries. We're seeing injuries that we haven't seen before. And I think a lot of it is due to the idea of 60 to 162. I think that the Sox have done a really nice job trying to monitor some of the innings. I get a little concerned with Rodon, a little concerned with Cease. Cease has remained healthy, which is wonderful. Rodon is still going to come back, and hopefully will pitch against Boston. They're intimating that that at least is a possibility. Then it's probably going to be Lucas. Then it's going to be Lance Lynn. I anticipate they're all going to be healthy as we come into the playoffs, however. And Michael Kopech will make a comeback. Again, very young, very strong. Now he's got to worry a little bit more about pitching as opposed to throwing. He got a whole lot better this year over what he's been in the past. But more than ever before, he's got to worry about pitching. And maybe the key to Michael, one illustration, he throws a 99-mile-an-hour fastball an inch and a half inside to Salvador Perez. If that ball is lively, Salvi never gets to it. Salvi got the good part of the bat on it and hit a home run. That never happens to a very lively Michael Kopech fastball.
Stoney, for fans that are listening and they hear you talk about Rodon, you've been through this as a professional pitcher and covering the game for as long as you have. Can you give us an idea of the difference between what a pitcher feels like when they're sore versus what a pitcher feels like when they're injured?
As you move along in this game, Lawrence, you're sore most of the time. And again, that goes back to don't tell me how rough the water is, just bring in the ship. The degree of soreness on a daily basis sometimes determines how well you're going to do. Now, in my era, I used to take, toward probably the middle of my career, toward the end, I used to take two aspirins every two innings. Every two innings, I take a couple of aspirins. And then Tylenol, obviously. Now they take some other things. Sometimes these guys will take Toradol injections, which will give them take away the soreness when they pitch. But that degree of soreness is something that pitchers live with. You have to get used to it because the arm wasn't made to pitch. And the guys who have been around a while understand that that soreness, that's going to be there. Injured is injured. Injured is you throw a pitch and you just, number one, it hurts so badly that you know you can't throw anymore. Or number two, you're worried that if you continue to pitch, you're really going to get hurt. But just general soreness, general fatigue, whatever it is, you learn how to go through that. But the thing you have with Carlos is that over the last couple of years, he threw 42 and a third innings. Now he's coming out throwing 99, sometimes 100. The slider is unhittable. He goes for, you know, goes till August 1st, and everything is just terrific. It's unrealistic to assume that he was going to stay that way throughout the season. He was going to have a couple of speed bumps. Now, last time when he came back after 19 days of rest, he was down 2.5 miles an hour. That, to me, is a sign that the arm isn't quite as strong as it needs to be at this point. Hopefully, when he comes back this time, we don't have to see 99. 97 would be nice. If he throws 97, we'll know that perhaps he's 100%. He can still win at 95, 96 because he is throwing his fastball to spots and that slider is still really tough. But, yeah, pitchers just get used to it, Lawrence. Soreness is just part of the game.
You've expanded my mind in talking about this season being as difficult as any season in the history of baseball because of that jump from 60 to 162. And I've been thinking over the last few weeks and watching the White Sox play and thinking about like how they can kind of land the plane on the regular season, how important the 40-man roster is for a team that's trying to win a World Series. And the White Sox have had success. And early on, it was them winning games with guys that, you know, Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams are signing off the street. It's adding guys that were left off of rosters at the end of the preseason. It's even last night where a guy like Jimmy Lambert gives you five really important innings for you to help make it out of a game against a really good opponent. I don't know if there's ever been a comp to the importance of the 40-man, but just from your experience this season with this team, what's impressed you about how guys have come in and done their job all throughout this roster, 1 through 40?
Well, look, I think that it's the depth of the organization that has been put to the test this year, maybe like no other year. Because the injuries the Sox have had have been monumental. I mean, to the core players on the team. You lose your starting second baseman in Madrigal. You lose Grandal. You lose Eloy for a good portion of the year. Then you lose Luis Robert. This is four starters off your team. And everybody says, well, they got swept by Houston, four in Houston. Yeah, right. Well, take four starters off Houston and see how good they would look at that point. Houston's a very good team, don't get me wrong, but the Sox were really a banged-up ball club when they went to Houston the first time. And then they took two or three from Houston in our ballpark. So Houston's a good team. But I've been impressed with the depth of this organization. And, Lawrence, I know this doesn't surprise you, but baseball, in my estimation, made a very big mistake this year. They don't make that many, but this was a big one. I don't think anybody anticipated the importance enough of going from 60 to 162, because if they did, you still have a 40-man roster, but they allowed only two players to come up. So instead of the 26-man that they started with in the season, now you can go to 28, instead of what it was where you can call up just about anybody. I think a realistic amount, instead of 28, which is, you know, it's the three over the 25 they had in previous years, but it's still not enough because this year, consequential players are getting hurt because of the 162. So maybe go to 32 players.
That was the number I was thinking.
Have in that last month of the season. To me, that would have been equitable for all teams. And this way, when they call up two players, only one can be a pitcher. So you have to call up a pitcher, you have to call up a position player. I think it's fine. I just think it was short-sighted on the part of baseball. I don't think necessarily it was an economic move because the guys you're bringing up for the most part are minimum salary guys, so I don't think it's that. I just think it's short-sighted on baseball. I think they should have made it a little bit a little bit bigger. I know you save money, you know, you save money on hotels and meal money and all the rest of that stuff, but that's inconsequential compared to your roster and what it will look like. And again, with so many injuries, with a full season of play, I think they could use more players.
Stoney, as always, I appreciate the baseball education. I have a favor to ask you. Herbie and I were talking about this because you're probably the best storyteller that I know. The next time that we talk, can we do some story time stuff and you could tell me some stories about Harry?
I will be able to tell you stories about everything. I thought, you know, I will be more than happy to do this favor for you, Lawrence, because I thought what you were going to say is, will I say that Chris Ranji is a handsome man?
Well, is he?
So you know I could never say that. Oh, of course, Chris is a very handsome man. Harry would say that all the time, by the way. He'd go, oh, he's a fine-looking man.
A strapping young man.
He would call him a horse of a man because being from St. Louis, it's not a horse, it's a horse. So, you know, he might call him that too. So, but yes, I will. We'll do story time next time we talk.
Stoney, as always, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, Lawrence, have a good rest of the show.
That is Steve Stone. He agreed to story time. I'm very excited about this. Very excited. Great stuff. Herbie, can you pull that thing that he said about Oakland? I want to bring that back later on in the show. That was strong. Really strong stuff. We need to take a break. Yesterday on the show, I talked about five things that I have concerns on with the Bears going into week one. And when I got home, I was like, you know what? I should try and balance the scale a little bit. Well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to tell you a few things that I think you should be excited about inside this Bears season. I will do it next here on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to two.
That's me.
On Sports Radio 670 The Score.
And I'm the one who screwed that one up. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by DuckDuckGo. All that because Herbie wanted to give you a bonus bass drop. Let's go.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
If Robert Quinn doesn't play well, and yes, there are some outs after this year in his deal, but if he doesn't play well this year, that could be the worst contract that Ryan Pace has signed to a free agent. And maybe his second worst move, if you want to say the moving up to draft Mitch was a bad move. The Robert Quinn signing could be it. I hope he is healthy. I hope that he is effective. He should be. He should be seeing all sorts of one-on-one matchups because the Bears have Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks. He shouldn't be seeing doubles at all. And if he does get those single matchups, he's got to win them. It's that simple. If Robert Quinn doesn't play well, it's going to be hard, not impossible, but it's going to be hard for the Bears defense to take a step forward when it comes to taking the ball away.
Make me a bicycle, clown.
Y'all better thank Herbie for this. Bass drop! Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thanks to Herb Lawrence for putting together the bass drop for all the people that miss it. when we don't have it. Ordinarily, if you're like, you usually tune into the show around like 12:30, like, what the hell's going on? That's what we do at the top of the show. Or whenever we get to the top of the show, because sometimes transitions go long and all sorts of stuff. That's what we do. I'm Lawrence. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. There's a lot of football stuff that I want to get done today. I listened in to Sean McVay's press conference from Monday with him talking about the Bears. I will share a little bit of that with you before the show is done. We had Steve Stone on to start the show. It was great. Yesterday, I went through, and you heard in the open, me talking about some of the things that I have concerns about when it comes to the Bears getting ready for week one. I got home. I made what I like to call old man dinner. Knocked out a couple of steaks yesterday. One for dinner last night, and then I'm planning on some steak nachos either today or tomorrow. So did that, and while I was sitting there waiting for my rice to finish, I was like, you know, there actually are some things that I'm kind of excited about when it comes to the Bears this season in some ways that I like how their team has been constructed. So in the interest of some balance, because it's not always going to be 50-50, since they are actual things that I believe and I'm not like fabricating it, I wanted to kind of go through a couple of those things with you and talk to you about some places where I think the Bears have made themselves better and interesting and more intriguing as a team. The first thing that I was thinking about was their depth at running back. First of all, David Montgomery has been as good as advertised. He's tough to bring down. When you give him a chance, he can catch the ball. And last year, he had over 1,500 yards from scrimmage. You start looking at, he's got a touchdown streak that's going on right now. I love the signing of Damian Williams. I really do. I think that he makes a lot of sense from a system fit. If you care about those sorts of things, from a system fit, he makes a lot of sense. And beyond that, I just think that having a guy that can handle both elements of your run game, that it's not a 100% key when you see him come in the game. Oh, he's the blocking running back. Or, oh, he's the guy that goes out on pass routes. The fact that he can do a little bit of everything, I think makes it a fun changeup for the Bears. And so I like what they've done. And I'm interested in Khalil Herbert. I don't know enough about him to give you an opinion, but I'm interested in him. I talked about the cornerbacks yesterday and how that's a major concern for me. Strangely enough, the safeties are not. And I know that Eddie Jackson has had a couple of years where you kind of look at him and go, wow, is he one of the best players on the Bears defense? I think that Eddie still has some greatness left in him, and he's a product of, or not completely, but mostly a product of the pass rush. If the pass rush is good, Eddie Jackson has a great year because he does have a nose for the ball. I thought Tashawn Gibson played really well last year, and I think Deion Bush is solid. And there are people, you know, when I threw it out on Twitter last night, people said, well, what about DeAndre Houston Carson? Yeah, you have a rotation of safeties that are pretty good, and that's exciting. That's really exciting. The thing I want to spend the most time about, like as far as excitement goes, and obviously watching Khalil Mack do his thing is great. And I joked about, I kind of like Akeem Hicks feeling like it's him versus the world. I think I said he takes disrespect and turns it into destruction. And he's probably outplayed his contract. So I understand the frustration there. If that's why he's doing like the media blackout and why he left practice and all of that stuff, I understand some of that frustration. The guy that plays behind him, Roquan Smith, man. I think that all of us here that watch Roquan play on a weekly basis, I think the league is lagging behind us on how good he is. Let me give you some of the numbers on Roquan. Last year, 139 tackles, 4 sacks, 18 tackles for loss. Keep that number in mind. 2 interceptions. It is the third consecutive season where Roquan's giving you over 100 tackles. During that time period, he's been second in the NFL in tackles for loss with over 100 tackles. He is one of 5 players since he came into the league in 2018 with 300-plus tackles, 20 or more tackles for loss, 10 or more sacks. He's one of the best linebackers in football, period. And he's had to wait a little bit to be recognized overall. He's not even in the top 100 players list, which doesn't make any sense to me. He should at least be in the 90s. The guy is sideline to sideline, and he is an absolute menace. So there are some of the things that I really do like about this Bears team. I got a couple more things I want to say about them and get back into a little bit of White Sox stuff. We will do that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Cole Wright is going to join me at 1 o'clock, so your favorite old guy in the barbershop, Cole Wright, will be on at 1 to talk Cubs and Bears. We will talk, is anyone saying Schwinsanity? Can I paraphrase that? Is that an obvious shirt already? Schwinsanity? We will talk to him about that, and we'll talk to him about the Bears as the Bears programming comes back to Marquee Network. So we'll talk with Cole about a lot of those things. I ran across this while looking through the Bears' notes. Khalil Mack in 13 primetime games, which the Bears are going to play on Sunday. They'll be on Sunday Night Football. Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth on the call. This is stupid. Like, these numbers are stupid. I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason to it, but in the 13 games that Khalil Mack has played in primetime, he has 11 sacks, 8 forced fumbles. 8! That's more than half a forced fumble a game. 2 fumble recoveries, 2 interceptions, and a touchdown. Look at, I mean, that's a career. That's a career for a lot of NFL defensive players. And Mack has them in primetime games. It is weird. It's a bit of a scheduling quirk that the Bears and Rams seem to play each other all the time. McVay has come up on the better side of it 2 times, and Nagy has come up on the better side of it 1. But I was just laughing at that number. Like, it's Khalil Mack is great. A milestone, if you care about these sorts of things, I never know what to take from this is what the record is in September. I guess one could argue that Matt Nagy has his team ready to play because his record in September since becoming head coach of the Bears is 9-2. The Bears started out last year, 5-1, and then things went really badly. After that, once we got to October, November, there's a real problem. But in September games, he's 9-2, so that's something to keep in mind. Watching the White Sox last night, I know that's a bit of a, but watching the White Sox last night was a lot of fun because I wasn't sure what to expect from Jimmy Lambert. And I'm concerned about them getting to the end with everyone who's hurt or injured or having time off. I'm not concerned about them losing the American League Central. That's never been my thing when it comes to looking behind them and seeing what the standings are. The goal for me and this White Sox team short term, is a short term goal, is to make sure that the series with Cleveland doesn't matter. Remember, it's a 5-game series. Cleveland helped the White Sox out in that regard by losing before the White Sox took the field. or like while they were in like the first inning of it. So now they sit at 11 games back. I don't think that the Indians can win enough games to make it matter. But what I don't want to see is, well, you know, Lance Lynn's on the IL, Giolito's injured. You don't know what's going on with Rodon, and maybe you have to save all of his starts for the last week of the season in October. I don't want them to kind of fall. Tim Anderson's not available. I don't want them to fall into some complacency between now and then that then allows for that series to matter. All I want is for the White Sox to have like an 8-game lead when they face Cleveland. So that doesn't really matter. It matters, but it doesn't really matter. I don't want them to have high leverage pitching situations between now and the end of the season. I don't want guys to have to push themselves to have to win games. You win a game like last night where Jimmy Lambert comes up, did exactly what you needed to do. The lineup took advantage early on in the game. I think that one of the things I'm going to do, Herbie, for the rest of the season is just watch Grandal at bats. Those are fun. Because you can see him almost dare a pitcher to walk him. Like, I'll take the walk. I'm totally fine with it. I've done it all season.
And you could see the motor in his brain cranking.
Where yes.
Somebody is, like, throwing him that outside pitch that's an off-speed pitch. He's like, okay, I'm going to take that down third base. And he almost kept that ball fair. He's locked in where you're just seeing balls that deep. And you could just slow your swing down and just surf it over to left field if you wanted to.
Yep. He's this season with him, his numbers, the traditional numbers, don't look right. It doesn't make any sense. But his at-bats are a thing to watch because it doesn't make sense. But you're right. Locked in is a really good way to phrase it. Really good way to phrase it. They still got a couple more games in Oakland, then the Red Sox, then the Angels, then the Rangers, then the Tigers, and then Cleveland. We're going to take a break. Next, we're going to the barbershop. I don't know what Cole Wright's going to say, but it's always worth listening to. He's next here on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.